Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
So one of the most common questions we're asked is about EBITDA, reconstituted net profit, and what it all means. Because I think sometimes in our world, it's easy just to kind of band these phrases around because we deal with it all the time. And I think it's probably worth just stripping it back to basics, explaining what EBITDA is, but importantly, what reconstituted net profit is. So EBITDA, let me start with that, and then I'll leave you unravel reconstituted net profit.
It's just a bunch of letters, but it's one of those interesting ones, isn't it? That, as you say, people sort of focus on it, but I'm not really too sure they understand what it is.
No, so EBITDA, the E is the earnings, which is the profitability that sits down the bottom. So that's the money that you've earned as a result of your business.
It's interesting why they
didn't
call it net, like an N.
Yeah.
But I suppose it would then be a nibbida.
It wouldn't work, would it?
But no, it's interesting.
The B is probably the least important and interesting part of the mnemonic, which is before. So then what you've got your earnings, and then what you're adding back to it. So the before bit is the I is interest.
Okay.
So any leasing interest, bank interest, that all gets added back. The T is the tax. So if you've paid any tax that's due, which would be due on your profitability, that
so
gets
limited companies really
back.
Only on that
corporation
one.
Corporation tax, yep. Exactly. Because as an individual, you wouldn't have tax because you would take your drawing. So that would go on your personal tax return and you pay personal tax, income tax. Mm. So yeah, the T is the tax. The D is depreciation. So that's the allowable accountancy deduction, which would typically be applied to your equipment, fixtures and fittings,
right,
as a typical deduction.
Okay.
And then the A is amortization, which is in the accountancy world, instead of calling it depreciation, they call it amortization, which effectively is the depreciation of the goodwill element. So you've got your earnings, profit before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. And the idea is that that gives you a stable position to be able to compare business to business. And for lots of businesses, that does work. Because dentistry is slightly different, and the slightly different bit is many of them are run not as lifestyle businesses, but there are benefits as a dental practice owner where you can incur costs that don't directly relate to the efficient running of a dental practice. And that's why we believe that the reconstituted net profit is really important, because for an independent owner taking that practice over, that's a much more reliable number. Mm,
it's more realistic.
Of what the profitability is in that business. So, yes, so that's the EBITDA bit. So what's reconstituted net profit? How does that differ?
So I think the way I've tried to explain to some people is a bit like EBITDA on steroids. Because, as you say, the most of our businesses, one, are still sole traders, so you can sort of discount the tax bit anyway.
Yep.
But the reality of what we want to do and what we've done is if a normal, if there's such thing as a normal dentist, was to take over this practice, what would it look like? Mm. Because basically it's a bit like, I suppose, there's no point buying a two-seater MX-5 if you actually want a family saloon, because it's just not fit for purpose, is it? So if you've got someone who wants to buy a dental practice who is a general dentist, who wants to buy an implant practice, it's a four-door saloon instead of a Mazda. So what we try to do is effectively reconstitute the profit for a purpose buyer to fit that practice. So you've got your EBITDA, which, as we know, is a start point. But then we look at those other things. So what are the most obvious ones? And feel free to chip in. The most obvious ones, I think, are when you've got a principal who is working 3 days a week because they wanted to work 3 days a week.
Yep.
It's not that there's no business. It's just the fact they wanted to play golf. They wanted to stay at home. They wanted to sit and watch
that's
TV.
One of the choices as a business owner.
Yeah.
You can do as much or as little as you want in terms of hands-on.
They might have worked for 30 years or they might have worked for 10 years, but they only want to work 3 days a week. So to provide the cover to generate the other income, they employ an associate. So the most obvious one there is, why, when you buy this practice, are you going to work 3 days a week? And I think we can genuinely say from our experience, most people want to buy a dental practice to work in it. Mm. Most of them will take a pretty chunky old loan on it. And most of them will want to generate as much revenue as they can and remain sane and not get divorced.
And it might be that they go through that cycle of, in the early days, working perhaps four and a half, possibly even five clinical days a week. But they might become the dentist in 10 years' time that's doing 3 days a week.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just where you are in your life stage.
So what we then do is we look at it and say, right, well, you're paying, you know, let's say you're paying £100,000 for an associate. So your profit has been reduced by £100,000. Mm. So just to keep it simple, let's say your profit was on your accounts £200,000. Yep. But you've paid £100,000 to an associate because the associate is doing 2 days a week. So you might come in and say, well, actually, I'm going to take over those 2 days a week. So are you going to have to pay that associate?
No.
No. So therefore,
so that £100,000 can be added back.
Yeah. Well, so your 200 has become 300. So suddenly it's way more profitable. So that's an obvious one. I think some of the others I've seen would be whereby the wife is the dentist, the husband is the this is a podcast, so you can't really see me doing inverted commas, is the practice manager who's on £75,000 a year.
Right.
So the reality of a sale is, one, would you keep the husband of the selling dentist on as your practice manager? And the answer is, I don't think so.
It's unlikely.
And if you wanted a practice manager, would you pay them £75,000?
Again, unlikely. So that's an item that can be added back again.
So let's say 35 grand for a practice manager, that's £40,000 that you can add to your bottom line. So those are two. So if that scenario was in that practice, we've just added £140,000 profit. What other ones can you think of?
I've seen quite often courses and travel.
Yes,
courses.
Yeah, so definitely.
You know, very reasonably for CPD reasons, you know, dentists do need to attend courses, need to stay up to date with the profession, the latest techniques. However, you may or may not need to go on a course that's in Germany or Croatia or New York.
Or in the case of the guy that I met whilst on holiday in Sun City, South Africa, where he was doing an implant course.
Yeah. And I don't doubt, I'm sure these courses are of very high quality, but from a running a dental practice point of view, that's kind of more personal development for you. And doesn't necessarily warrant the investment of money for that practice. Mm. And like with travel, again, people may travel around.
Travel's a good one, yeah.
To get to different events. And again, that's a cost that would have been incurred by the practice, which doesn't necessarily. I've seen motor expenses appearing in accounts before. And again, when you're only traveling to and from your place of work and it's your dental practice, arguably that's not something that would feature for somebody going forward. And I guess all these small items, they add up, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? I know we quite often get questioned about the reconstituted profit number and, you know, where did we get it from? And it's almost sometimes as if the buyers think we just sort of like, right, we've taken a number, we've made it up, and then we've just added it back to make it look better. But I think we will say, don't we, ask us the question, because we can tell you where those numbers come from. You know, I think the other one that we've seen as well is the surplus calculation. I know that sometimes people get a bit confused over that, don't they? So do you want to talk us through the surplus calculation?
Yeah, so in essence, and it's been really relevant in the past few years because of what's happened post-COVID, but the surplus calculation effectively factors in. But by the very nature of financial accounts, they're historic. Mm. So at the moment, we're now in May 2023. We're looking at accounts for 2022 at the latest. In some cases, 2021, if people are a bit behind their admin. So what it means is that the dental practice in the last 9, 12, 18 months, the numbers have changed. And where you see an increasing profile, the fees are going up. With those fees going up, there will be an associated profitability. So what we do is we do a calculation that says, okay, so in your last set of accounts, you turned over £700,000, but your last 12 months figures show that you're producing revenue of £850,000. In that difference of £150,000, there's going to be a profit surplus. Mm. So we will do a calculation to establish what we believe that profit surplus to be after deducting labs, materials, associates costs, hygienists, whatever it might be. We'll also look to make sure that the staff costs are similar to the last set of financial accounts to try and get... And it is, it's an informed guess. Mm. It's not a pure guess, but it is an informed guess. And what that will do is that will give us a surplus for the last 12 months that, again, would add to the profitability. Because accounts are always so far out of date, you're always working a year to 18 months behind. Mm. And so one, because it can go one of two ways. Yeah, in a declining position, we want to make sure that... Down, yeah. Exactly. We want to make sure we can present the most current position possible. The reality is that for most in the last 2 years, the numbers have gone up. And so quite rightly, the seller would expect for that to be factored into their valuation. But also the buyer is buying a business that's performing at a higher level than he's shown on the accounts.
Yeah, and I think it's reassuring for those listeners to understand that we're not trying to fleece them with a value, because we don't just take the income and then say, right, we'll take your labs and mats so you made like an extra £100,000 profit. Mm. We do say, well, someone else is going to have to generate those numbers unless the principal's got the capacity, which in most cases they don't. Yeah. So there's an associate cost. And I think the one that they probably don't know that we do, because be honest, we probably don't articulate it in our calculation because we just show a number, but the answer is ask us, is the fact that we do look at the current staff as opposed to those historical staff, especially in the current environment where it makes a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, well, if you think that it's been well covered in the press, there's been strikes of people striking for more money. Lots of dental practices have increased the pay rates to their team. Mm. And you're right, we get a schedule of up-to-date team members and what they're paid, and we then cross-reference that to the staff costs in the last set of accounts and look at what the difference is and factor that into the valuation. And just to be clear, obviously, we're directors of Frank Taylor & Associates. What we're talking about applies to any valuation. You should be able to go to any organisation that's provided a valuation and ask questions like this to understand how that valuation has been created. Any decent valuer should be able to defend and explain how they got to their number.
Yeah, it's not sort of like think of my birthday, times it by two and add 10% or something.
Yeah.
I must admit, I think the reconstituted profit figure is that one that EBITDA is great, and obviously for multiples, they associate led buyers, they will probably use EBITDA more than our reconstituted profit figure.
Yeah,
but the two apply. I'll tell you one thing that might be worthwhile you mentioning, Andy, because we get it all the time, is the difference between when people are down the pub or in the cafe or at a dental show, probably more appropriately, where you've got some guy saying, I sold for 8x EBITDA, and another bloke says, well, I sold for 5x EBITDA. But they're sort of almost the same practices in the same locality. Mm. And somehow the bloke or the percentage, the bloke who sold for 5 feels that he's been hard done by. Yeah. So I know that we've had this discussion with loads of people, but it might be worthwhile you explaining that as to why that sort of looks a bit odd.
So let's just try and keep the numbers really simple. So we have a dental practice that produces a profit of £200,000.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's the profit is with the principal working in the business.
Right, okay.
So that business would attract a multiple of 5x.
Okay.
Profit of 200, multiple of 5, it's worth £1 million.
£1 million.
That's with a dentist working in that practice.
So it's your owner-manager.
Exactly.
Most of the practices still owner-manager, £1 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
So these numbers don't quite work, but it will just make the point. If that same practice was being run on an associate-led model, so it's owned by a corporate, they're completely reliant on associates to deliver the dentistry. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that profitability dropped to £100,000.
Yep.
So it's no longer £200,000, it's £100,000.
Because you're paying everyone to deliver the
because
work. Because
they've increased associate costs. And that practice is now going to have a multiple of 10 times. So the other one only had a multiple of 5 times. And now you're getting a 10 times multiple, which is amazing news.
Which is high.
It's brilliant. It is high and it's amazing. 10 times 100,000 is £1 million.
So same value.
So a £200,000 profit with a 5 times multiple is £1 million. And a 10 times multiple, but it's only applied to 100,000 profit, is £1 million.
It's still £1 million.
So the value doesn't change. And it's important to mention that in evaluation, there's two numbers that are really important. Everybody obsesses about the multiple. When you're down the pub, everyone says, oh, what a multiple
is
that?
What
a
multiple is that? Yeah.
And a multiple, by virtue of the word multiple, has to be multiplied by something. Mm. The something it's multiplied by is critical because that's the underlying profitability. And as that moves, your value moves. And if a practice is going to be worth the same, regardless of who buys that practice, the profit changes, so the multiple changes. Mm. So a multiple is a really interesting number, only in the context of what's it being multiplied by. A multiple on its own is meaningless.
Yeah,
there's no context. There's no context.
It's because it's, isn't it? It's the, you know, we've done this for a very long time. And I think, you know, Frank and Sandra, what was it? Longest, oldest, well-established, whatever, 1988. You know, that when we first bought the business in 2000, the question we were always asked was, what's the percentage? What's the percentage of turnover goodwill? What's the percentage? That was it. That's what people asked. Now they say, what's the multiple?
But the principle's still the same. You know, what percentage? Well, what you multiply, what you apply the percentage to, the multiple, well, what are you applying it to? And if you don't go to the second question, which is, well, what's it multiplied by? The multiple means nothing.
Yeah.
From a vanity point of view, you know, I got 10 times.
Yeah,
it sounds brilliant. But you might be better only getting a lower multiple because it's been applied to a higher profit. This is all about delivering pound notes into the bank account.
Mm.
It's not an ego or a vanity game. It's about getting a robust valuation that stands up, but the underlying profitability is applied to a multiple that works.
Mm. And I suppose what we can say in closing is when we look at trying to do the reconstituted profit, we try to do it as a general dentist taking over. So people who are undergrossing, but have the potential, as in someone else is grossing, that will be factored in. But also when someone's a super grosser, that has to be factored in as well.
Yeah.
But the idea is that as valuers, as every valuer, as Andy says, as you said, man, is the fact of it should be what's going on. You know, what's the repeatability?
Yeah.
Not necessarily what it is now.
Absolutely. Oh, good. We enjoyed that.
Excellent. Really hope good. People get it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.